Support for the Exchange podcast from NHPR comes from you, our subscribers, and from
the Elm Street Group at Morgan Stanley, working with clients to create enduring financial value and a lasting impact through sustainable investing solutions. A local wealth management team with global insights. Find out more at the Elm Street Group at morganstanley.com.
Dartmouth Hitchcock. Imagine nationally ranked healthcare in your community. With convenient locations throughout northern New England, world-class providers are closer than you think. Visit dartmouthhitchcock.org to learn more. Dartmouth Hitchcock is here. And from
New Hampshire Center for Cognitive and Behavioral Therapies, providing outpatient, evidence-based, specialty behavioral health and substance use disorder services, nhccbt.com.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Canoy, and this is The Exchange. A school bus pulling away from the curb. It's the sound of the season around the Granite State. But in some communities, finding bus drivers has been a struggle this year. And districts have had to adapt, playing with schedules, and in one case, putting off the first day of school by a week. Today in The Exchange, we start by asking, why so few bus drivers? And how are districts adjusting? Later in our show, we turn to when the academic year should begin. Governor Sununu raised the debate recently, saying he thinks schools statewide should not start until after Labor Day. We'll hear from the governor on that and other voices today in The Exchange as we look at how and when to get to school. And let's hear from you, of course. The Exchange number is 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. For this first part of our show, as we look at school bus drivers, we're joined from Los Angeles by Thomas McMahon. He's editor of School Bus Fleet, a national publication. Thomas, great to have you. Thank you for your time.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us for the hour is Dean Kaskaden. He's superintendent of schools for the Bow District, SAU 67. He was previously superintendent in the North Country in Whitefield. And Dean, it's good to meet you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. I do have to mention that Dunbarton's part of SAU 67, too.
Absolutely. And Jason Moon is here. He's NHPR reporter who covers the Seacoast and education for us. And Jason, once again, thank you for helping us
out.
Good
morning, Laura.
Well, and Thomas, we want to start with you. What does the school bus driver shortage look like nationwide?
Well, we did a survey recently of school bus contractors. So these are the companies that come in to school districts that want to outsource their transportation, and they provide the buses and the drivers. So this was our contractor survey, and we found that all of the respondents had some degree of driver shortage. So some of them are saying, you know, it's moderate. So 54% said they had a moderate shortage, and we quantify that as 6 to 10% short of drivers. We had 22% said it was severe, 5% desperate.
Wow, severe and so, desperate. Go ahead, Thomas.
Yeah. So, and this is just kind of the latest finding in what we've been seeing over the past few years, and this is with the contractors as well as the school district operations, the ones that run their own school bus service. We had a school district survey last fall, and that found that 90% of the school district surveyed had some degree of driver shortage. So it's been going on for a few years now.
Are there parts of the country, Thomas, where it's more severe and areas of the country where it's less severe? Or is it pretty much a problem across the board?
You know, it's pretty much across the board. I mean, we've heard from some school districts that have implemented some things to try to mitigate this, and they've had some success in some cases. But yeah, I mean, it's something they're dealing with everywhere, really.
Well, and in a few minutes, we'll definitely talk about how districts are adjusting, because there's some creative ideas out there. But Jason, how about in New Hampshire? What does the shortage look like here?
Well, many districts have been dealing with it, some more acutely than others. Look no further than Northwood, where the bus driver shortage forced them to delay the start of school by a week and then push back the start of the school day by 2 hours. And so it's really become an issue over there, but they're not alone. I know in Wakefield, they also had to delay the beginning of the school year by about a week due to a driver shortage. And, you know, it's a problem that I think is challenging for rural school districts in particular, which is just about every school district in New Hampshire. And once you don't have drivers, it can be hard to find them.
Well, in some of these districts, right, Jason, have gotten bigger and bigger as we've seen school consolidation happening. And so you've got far-flung districts where, you know, it's a lot of driving to
be
done.
Right, and not—and that becomes the only option for getting kids to school. It's not like these are walkable school districts. You know, maybe Manchester or Nashua, you can get away with that. A lot of kids do walk to school, but for most of the state, it's got to be a school bus.
Well, and Dean, to you, again, you're the superintendent in Bow, which includes Dunbarton. It's a pretty big district. How much does your district struggle with a bus driver shortage?
We're not too bad. We actually have two districts, SE67, Dunbarton and Bow. Dunbarton contracts with Goffstown Truck, so we have the contracting relationship there. And Bow owns their own system. They own their own buses, and we manage a fleet of drivers. It's difficult. We've been able to at least get the kids to school. The state law says we must provide transportation grades 1 through 8, and high school transportation is optional. But in both districts, we provide transportation K-12, and we've been able to manage to get that going on time. Our real issue is athletics and co-curricular trips right now.
So if the band wants to go somewhere or the soccer team wants to go somewhere, you're struggling to get them there.
We're patching it together. We're putting it together. We offer a lot of co-curricular activities and a lot of sports. And if you look at the when they run, you know, you have to run your routes and you have to get your kids back to school. But a lot of those teams are going out at the same time.
What do you hear, Dean, from your fellow superintendents? I'm guessing you guys all talk to each other.
That it's tough. I mean, it's a tough job to fill. I mean, it's a part-time job. In Bow, I'll just speak to that. You do your morning run, there's a break, and then you do your afternoon run, and a normal route driver gets paid $92.20 for the day. So what do you do with a job like that? I mean, you got to be up early in the morning. You got to get the kids to school. You know, you really can't work in between the two times and then the afternoon run. And then if you fill in and you do athletic or co-curricular trips, that's a $16.22 an hour job.
Is being a bus driver, Dean, a full-time job?
I don't think it's considered a full-time job, and that would be important to us because one of our good areas of picking up bus drivers are retired people. And so if you're in the New Hampshire retirement system, you would be able to pick up a bus driving job because it's not considered full-time. But basically, it's a part-time job that takes you a full-time to do it.
Right, or even a little bit more so, because you get to start pretty early and you may be running pretty late in the evening.
Yes.
You know, Thomas, Dean raised something that I wanted to ask you about. Is there a difference in the shortage in those districts where bus drivers are school district employees, you know, public employees of the district, versus employees of a private company that contracts out? Do you see some differences there in recruitment and retention?
No, we really don't see a difference. I mean, our surveys have found that both the school district and the contractor operations are dealing with this, and it's for the most part pretty severe.
Okay, so the big question then, Thomas, for you and everybody is why? Why are we seeing this shortage? What do you think, Thomas?
Yeah, I think there are a number of factors, and one of them is what Dean mentioned. It's essentially a part-time job, but kind of spread over the whole day. So they start early, they have a morning shift, they have a big break in the middle of the day, and then they come back in the afternoon and drive the routes.
Go ahead.
Yeah, well, I'm just saying that schedule doesn't work for everybody, but it does work well for some people.
And then the other issue is pay, Thomas? Are bus drivers, do they feel like they're not compensated enough for this weird schedule or what?
We do hear that, yeah. So the average driver pay nationwide from our surveys is about $15.50 per hour. So when you consider the responsibility that a school bus driver has, I mean, not only are they driving a 40-foot vehicle and dealing with the challenges of that, but they have several dozen kids on board behind them, and they're trying to manage their behavior. And it's a lot of responsibility. So,
well, we receive. Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead, Thomas. Sorry.
No, I was just saying, you know, there are a lot of drivers who feel like they should be paid more for what they do.
Well, we got a letter from a listener who I think lives in Northwood. This person did not say and did not give a name, but talks about that responsibility. So I want to get our other guests on this, too. This listener says some enterprising reporter at NHPR might want to look more closely into the bus driver shortage and all the ensuing chaos it's causing for families and staff. This person says, why is there a bus driver shortage? The pay, the lack of benefits or any bargaining power, the hours, the responsibility and stress, this person says, the lack of respect on the part of all parties, students, parents, administration in dealing with behavior issues on the bus. This person says this also is not unique to Northwood, but it needs to be addressed. What about that, Dean? Bus driver stress. I have heard from my own kids about some pretty shoddy behavior on the bus.
Well, the bus is probably our most difficult place of dealing with behavior because of the job that you're talking about. The driver's job, number one, is to drive that bus safely. And to we expect our drivers to almost have a perfect driving record. I mean, when there is a bus accident, it is a big deal, and we have to go do a number of investigations. We do a number of things with our bus drivers to help with the discipline. In the BOSE system, we have cameras both in the front and the back of the bus, so that helps a lot. You'd be amazed at how many times someone comes in and says, well, my child didn't do that on the bus, and it's like, well, let's go to the tape, and we'll look at it.
Oh, my goodness.
And our student discipline on the bus is done via our administrators, and anything that's reported from the bus is brought to them. I think parents' concern is sometimes bullying and things like that. If you think about it, you have all those kids in a fairly unstructured time. Some of the runs get up to like 40 minutes or so, and you're asking a child to behave and to be a good citizen, which we do in school, but you're asking them to do that in back of someone whose primary job is facing forward and moving that bus forward.
And some of those trips are long, as you said, in these big rural districts.
Correct. And I think in our district, our first motto in our district is we care for each person every day, and that extends to every single one of our students, by every single one of our staff members, but it also extends to our bus drivers. And I just want to give a big shout out to our bus drivers, because I see our bus drivers really have relationships with these kids. We have a singing bus driver who'll get off his bus and play his guitar and sing to them. And they have bus drivers that have great relationships with kids. It's the first employee that most kids see and the last employee that see in my district. And I want my bus drivers to give that child a great experience on the bus. So we'll try to support them how we can.
Well, as districts try to get creative to address this shortage, one of the issues that's come up is there too much training, checking, screening of bus drivers? Lauren sent us a Facebook comment. She says, one of my favorite bus drivers happens to be a retired fire chief, told me that a major problem in recruiting other firefighters is the extensive training required. Lauren says, given that these firefighters are extremely well qualified to drive in enormous vehicles in the most precarious situations, wouldn't it make sense to shorten their training time? That way, retired firefighters could more easily become bus drivers, and active duty firefighters could offer their services as substitutes on the days they don't work at the firehouse. Jason, are some people in New Hampshire talking about this, not specifically about firefighters, but just about, okay, are the training requirements too tough?
Yeah, definitely. And that's a good example of how some of these issues, especially in towns where it's a real crisis, are generating all sorts of ideas. I mean, in Northwood, they were really kind of throwing everything against the wall. There were ideas about getting the National Guard to come down and drive buses, or maybe the school district could just hire Uber drivers to get kids to school. They were, a lot of these were, for obvious reasons, could not happen. But people were really kind of scraping the bottom of the barrel for ideas about how to fix this problem. The firefighter one sounds like an intriguing idea. It could, could be a possible solution. But the training does take about 6 to 8 weeks from initial inquiry to behind the wheel of the bus. I know that at the state level, Education Commissioner Frank Edelblue has been exploring ways that they might be able to complete the state portion of that certification faster. But I'm not sure how much wiggle room there is. I mean, it is, as we've been discussing, you're driving a big bus, you want to know how to do it.
Right. And most of those buses don't have seat belts, so you want the bus driver to be driving extra carefully. Lauren, thank you for the comment. We'll take your questions and comments, too, on this bus driver shortage, 1-800-892-6477. Why do you think it's happening, and what ideas do you have to alleviate it? Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org, or you can respond on Facebook or Twitter like Lauren did. It's NHPR Exchange. Again, 1-800-892-6477. Thomas, I'd love some stories from you, too, about how districts are getting creative.
Yeah, well, one example is Montgomery County Public Schools in Maryland. We heard from the transportation director there recently, and he had a few ideas. And one of them was that they have lowered their English proficiency standards from completely conversational to functional or safe. So they actually offer English classes in the midday for those who want to improve their English proficiency. That was an interesting idea that came from that school district. But the other part of it is it ties in with that amount of time it takes to get trained and tested for the job, like Jason was talking about. So what they do is they pay drivers, or I should say the prospective drivers, once they start that training. And I think that's one of the critical things. You know, are they going to be paid for this 6 to 8 weeks or however long it's going to take? Or do they have to kind of go through that and not have a paycheck coming in during that time? So we see both of those things happening in different places.
Well, as we look at the different solutions that, you know, different districts have been talking about, maybe implementing, Thomas, I wonder what types of solutions don't you want to see that have been put out there? What makes you go, we really should not do that?
Well, I think there's there are some important measures in place to make sure that there are good people behind the wheel and that they know what they're doing, and that's this training and testing period. So yeah, it takes a long time. I think there are ways that it could be made more efficient, streamline it a bit. But you know, we want to make sure that they're going through all the background checks, that they're qualified for the job, that they know how to drive the vehicle and deal with the students, so they have the training that's needed for the job. So we wouldn't want to diminish that, but maybe it could be streamlined.
Go ahead, Dean. Love to hear from you on this.
Yeah, we've done a couple things this year especially. One, we put out a recruitment bonus for anyone in our district, doesn't necessarily have to be a bus driver, that if they refer a bus driver, they come in and they complete the training and they actually work for us for a while, there would be a monetary bonus for referring. We also implemented this year a safe driving bonus for our drivers in Bow, and most people would have gotten that anyway, but it was a way to recognize, maybe give them a little extra pay for something that they're already doing, which is completing their school year without an accident. So we've tried to put in a few little incentives for them, but the biggest thing I think we've tried to do is just try to make bus driving a job that we appreciate, a job that we talk about the good job that they're doing. And I know that on certain days, later on we'll get in the calendar discussion, but on certain days when I have school and it's a little questionable, take everything that they've been doing and then up the stress level by 3 times, they do a very tough job.
All right. Coming up after a short break, we will switch gears, pardon the bad pun, to the question of when the school day should actually start. Thomas McMahon, we're going to let you go. Thank you so much for helping us out.
Thanks for having me.
That's Thomas McMahon, editor of School Bus Fleet, a national publication. Coming up, should New Hampshire mandate that districts not open their school doors until after Labor Day? We'll look at that in just a moment. Stay with us.
This week, NHPR's Something Wild explores the intertidal zone, that place between high and low tides.
And this is a difficult place to live. Twice a day, you are pounded by waves and then exposed to sun and wind.
Doesn't sound so bad on a warm September afternoon, but imagine that constant barrage in November. Chris and Dave give us the lowdown on the creatures and veg that call this place home. Subscribe to Something Wild wherever you get your podcasts.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. We turn now to another start of school debate, and that's when the first day should be. Right now in New Hampshire, local districts set their own calendars. But Governor Sununu said a few weeks ago he thinks the academic year shouldn't start until after Labor Day. The governor called it a home run of an idea for families and the state's tourism-dependent economy. Since then, there's been no shortage of responses. Many kids cheered, as did businesses that rely on summer tourism. But many teachers said they weren't sure about this, along with school district leaders who asked, what about local control? So, Exchange listeners, what do you think? Should the state mandate a post-Labor Day start to school? Should it be up to the local community? What do you see as the benefits and drawbacks of each? Let's hear from you. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Two of our guests from our first segment remain with us, Dean Cascaden, superintendent of schools for the Bow and Dunbarton District, SAU 67. He was previously superintendent in Whitefield. Jason Moon is still here, NHPR reporter who covers the Seacoast and education for us. And with us now in studio also is Megan Tuttle. She's with the National Education Association of New Hampshire. And Megan, welcome. Good to meet you.
Great. Thank you.
Well, so Jason, let's start off with just this proposal that the governor put forward. When did he put this into the conversation and what's been the reaction since?
Well, he kind of, formally pitched it in an interview with a union leader a little over a week ago. But I know this is an idea that he's been kind of toying with for at least a few months. I know I've been out with him and have heard him sort of talk about this idea once on a visit to Hampton Beach. Actually, he was talking with some of the restaurateurs and remarking that many of the wait staff were high schoolers, and wouldn't it be nice if they could keep them through the Labor Day weekend? And so I know he's been kind of thinking about this idea for a while, and it seems like he feels, based on the feedback he's gotten, that he wants to press this issue. I mean, as you said, there's a lot of interesting aspects to it, not the least of which is the local control issue, which is generally something that a Republican governor, conservatives in education policy would favor. And it's actually ironic or interesting, at least, that this conversation is happening on a day that just yesterday, Frank Edelblue, the education commissioner, sent out an email praising the work of the legislature in solidifying local control. So you have a real tension here around that issue, which is interesting.
Well, and the governor is speaking from personal experience, too. He's a dad of three young kids and a former tourism business operator. So go ahead, Jason.
Yeah, so he knows, right. So that's another thing he talks a lot about is knowing these sort of staffing issues, you know, up close and personal, and what it feels like to be a business owner. And so I do think that's a significant part of where it's coming from. And I think he's heard from other business owners and, you know, in tourism areas of the state like Hampton Beach, like in the Lakes region, that do rely on, younger folks to work in those businesses during the summer. And, you know, I think they'd be happy to see this.
Well, and school does seem to be starting in general earlier and earlier. I think Keene started, I don't know, the 21st or the 22nd. Here in Concord, they didn't start till a little bit later. I think it was the 28th or the 29th. But, wow, once you start bumping into the third week of August, it does start to feel kind of early. Megan Tuttle, how did you feel when you first heard about this idea?
I really had mixed feelings. You know, the first thing I was thinking as president of NEA New Hampshire is this for tourism or is this for education? And the question really is, you know, what is educationally best for the children? Is it best for them to start after Labor Day or is it best for them to start before? How late would they be going into June? There's a lot of different things you have to consider. The later you go into June, the hotter the schools get. I taught for 18 years as a social studies teacher, and it can get very, very horrible in the classroom the later into June you go. And, you know, it sounds like this really is all about tourism. It's really not necessarily what's going to be best for the kids, as well as the fact, you know, this is going to extend out the number of weeks that kids are out of school in the summer. So you're going to have 11 or 12 weeks potentially where kids are not in school. Not all children are able to go on those wonderful, you know, excursions with their parents, to go to museums, to travel. So if you have kids that need that time in school, they're going to be missing out on a lot more time. And even as a parent, I have three children of my own. It concerned me. What was the, you know, basis behind this?
So not really loving this idea.
Not yet.
And we're going to hear from the governor a little bit later on, so I want to let folks know that. What might make you feel a little bit better about it, Megan?
A discussion. NEA New Hampshire, professionals, educators, we haven't been spoken to about this. And, you know, I think there's a lot more to this than just saying, let's start after Labor Day and see what happens. There's a lot to this. It's a complicated issue. Starting the school year later and then maybe just adding on 15 minutes a day. As a teacher, I don't know what those 15 minutes truly are going to do for students. And that's what we have to keep in mind. If this is going to be the way that the governor wants to go, we have to have a discussion on, is this educationally the best thing for students in New Hampshire?
Okay, and you're right. It's a lot more complicated than it looks like on its face. And I have a lot more questions for all of you. We got a ton of response from our listeners even before we went on the air on this. On Twitter, Zachariah says he would rather see summer vacation reduced to 6 weeks instead of expanded. Zachariah says it is not an easy time for working parents. Also on Twitter, Fran says, I am aware of at least one local employer who won't employ local students if they can't work through Labor Day. Dean Cascaden, really quickly, how do you feel about this proposed mandated Labor Day start?
Well, I've been building calendars for a dozen years now, and no matter what decision you make, it seems someone says that's the worst decision I've ever heard. Mostly, I've given out a bunch of surveys over the years, and they come back 50-50 split. But when you build a calendar, right now, most districts based on 180 days. Now, the state law has been changed, and you can do a school day on hours. So some school districts are going less than 180 days. But let's think about Labor Day itself. It's not a fixed holiday. It can vary from September 1st to September 7th. So this year, starting after Labor Day, seems like a great idea. What about the year when Labor Day is September 7th? Is it still a great idea to start so late? So, you know, I start with Labor Day in Bow. Kind of controls our calendar a little bit because our union has negotiated that they will not start more than 5 days before that. So our great opening is we have two teacher days. We go the 3 days for students prior to Labor Day. We have a great opening. Kids come in. We deal with all that. We have the three-day Labor Day holiday. We have a four-day week, and now we're into the five-day week, and we love that start.
So you have a three-day week, a four-day week, and then a five-day week, so kids kind of ramp up.
And adults.
And adults,
they don't
absolutely
need a nap, but by the third week, they don't need a nap.
Well, what do you think about the idea, though, that, you know, it's disruptive to have a couple days here and there, and then you're off for 5 days? I mean, you can't really get in the swing of things. You're not starting off with a bang.
But there are other days that we have to deal with that cause more disruption from that. One of that is Veterans Day. It's on Armistice Day, 11-11. And that can fall at any time during the week. And by state law, students cannot go to school that day. And so we always have to take advantage of that. That's actually a more disruptive time than starting out in with that. We have to deal with elections in schools now. And many schools have to close during elections because with safety concerns, it's very hard to run both of those. So closing on a Tuesday. You know, so you're open Monday, you're closed on Tuesday, and then you go 3 days. So there are other aspects of the calendar I think are more disruptive than having a three-day week to start off.
Okay, well, speaking as a parent with kids in public schools myself, I won't even start on all the various disruptions. But let's go to our listeners, and then we have a lot more to talk about. And again, the governor is going to be joining us on this issue in about 10 minutes, so we'll talk to him as well. The exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. You can respond on Facebook or Twitter like Zachariah and Fran did. It's NHPR Exchange. Again, 1-800-892-6477. And Mark is calling in from Goffstown. Hi, Mark. You're on the air. Welcome.
Good morning.
Morning.
So I really think that this is a local issue. I mean, if people on the seacoast want to have their schools start after Labor Day because they have a lot of their students who may be working in the local businesses, that's totally fine. But it should be a decision that's made by the community because I think they have the pulse of what is best for their kids in their community.
So you do not agree that the state should mandate this. You think that this should be decided locally.
Well, I think that's what we've seen. I mean, I'm a retired principal, and I've seen a lot of different districts do a lot of different things as far as scheduling. And, districts try out different calendars around the state and around the country. And I think that's the venue for doing that.
Okay.
But
Mark.
To say that it's just good for business, to me, it really is it's kind of a heavy-handed approach just to have a one-stop shopping approach for education.
Mark, thank you for the call. And Donna agrees with you. She sent us an email. She says, as a school board member, I believe that the local school board should set their own calendar. And the state government, especially Republicans who are supposed to be for local control, Donna says, let the elected officials do what they were elected to do. Donna, thank you for the email. You can send us an email as well, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. Jason, I want to pick up on something that Megan said. She talked about the summer slide, and this has come up a lot. Now, what is the summer slide, Jason?
It's a feeling that we're probably all familiar with as kids going through summer. You just forget stuff, you know? You lose a little bit. You forget what the common denominator means and so on and so forth. And then you have to spend the first couple weeks of the next school year remembering what that is and getting back up to speed. And there's a lot of research about the summer slide. And the general consensus is the shorter the summer, the less slide there is. So there's less time for you to forget stuff as a student, essentially. So that's another aspect to this is, you know, if you lengthen the summer, do you continue that slide for students? And it's particularly important when you think about achievement gaps between affluent kids and kids without those resources, because oftentimes, kids from wealthier families have more access to learning opportunities over the summer. They're going to museums, to science museums, to fairs, to parks, things like that. And they're sliding less. And so you could make an argument based on the research that the longer the summer, there's a larger gap. It grows a little bit over that period of time.
So, Megan, if there are programs to address the summer slide now, could those be extended if this Labor Day start actually happened?
They could. Again, it's all part of a larger discussion that has to happen. I think there, like I said before, so many moving parts to this. You can't just, it's not going to be one size fits all. It is a local issue.
Go ahead, Dean.
I think what you do is you have to look at the calendar as a whole. I mean, I move my start date 3 days later for students. The first question, does that really accomplish the stated reason for this? Because I think high school sports are going to start in mid-August anyway, and you're going to lose a lot of your labor force because high school sports are starting out. So are we now going to mandate that high school sports don't start till after Labor Day? Well, you try to tell the football community that we're not going to start having football games right off the bat. And again, you have to go through and look at the calendar as a whole. I mean, if this were mandated, I would look at we have a 4-day Columbus Day weekend because we have a non-contract day on October 6th this year. That's the NEA conference day. And then we take the Columbus Day holiday off. And my community likes that 4-day break right about there. When we've done surveys, they've said, that's a nice little break to have. And people have gotten used to that. We take the Wednesday off before Thanksgiving. We have a professional development day there. So if you really want to hit a home run, give us all of those and get us out before get us out right in the middle of June. Everyone would be happy, but our school year would be down to, 175 days.
Is but you don't acceptable? Have to measure it in terms of days. You can measure it in terms
Correct.
Of hours.
But that usually just drops like maybe 2 days off the calendar.
You know, Megan, getting to what Dean just said, you know, there are these other days, 4-day weekends, practically every time you have a regular 3-day weekend, it's an extra day tacked on the day
Wait,
before Thanksgiving.
That's not quite accurate there.
In Concord, anyway. I'm talking about the Concord district. Dean, I know every district's different. Yep. Couldn't you give a little on that end, Megan, and then give folks until after Labor Day?
You could, but like Dean just said, it's
that's
not...
that's disruptive, too.
It could be, but not every district does that. I know Concord does, but in Pembroke, the Friday before Labor Day isn't a day off for the kids. It's something they still have to go into. And the Friday before Columbus Day, not everybody has off. There are a lot of schools in the state that still have school that day. So every district is different. And this goes back to the issue of there's local control, and the local really does know what's best for the kids in that district.
I wonder if part of the reason Governor Sununu introduced this is a lot of parents grumble about this pre-Labor Day start. Again, in some districts, it's pretty early. And you can say local control, but some parents feel like, look, they're not being listened to locally. So I just wonder if that's a factor. I wonder what you think, Megan, and I'll ask you too, Dean. You know, we can say local control, but parents who don't like this feel like no one's listening.
It could be. I can see that side of it. At that point, I would say then they should be involved with the school board. They should be involved in letting their voices known a bit more so that they can have their voices heard and they would have a say. The school board, you know, works with the district to set the calendar. This isn't done in secret in some back room. So there are places that, you know, the school board meetings that those parents can go to. I'm a parent. I've gone to them. That's where you can have your voice heard.
So if people don't like it, don't just complain about it to the governor. Go to the school board meeting. I'm guessing you agree, Dean.
No, it is a local decision, and they can have input on it. There just isn't that much wiggle room. I mean, people. When I used to have a big committee, we get together, we discuss this over and over, and it come down to a debate on like one day during the whole calendar. By law, I have to have 10 days after my stated end of school to make up for inclement weather days. So, you know, the end is constrained. Now you're going to constrain the beginning. You know, I'm going to play around with some of those little holidays. Already, I don't have any PD days in my calendar that are not connected to an election.
What's a PD day?
A professional development day. Mm-hmm. So I don't close school for teachers to have professional development unless, oh, look, we're having an election. We're going to close school anyway. We'll do that. Okay, how are we going to work our conferences around Veterans Day? The only one that we do that's kind of out of the ordinary, again, is the four-day weekend over Columbus Day, and my community has wanted to keep that going.
Lots of emails and calls, and let's go back to our listeners. Judy's in Keene. Hi, Judy. You're on the air. Welcome.
Thank you. Yeah, I have 2 points. One is, when I was growing up, we always started after the Labor Day weekend, and we got out at the beginning of June. And it certainly didn't do us any harm educationally. I got into a very good college and so on. The other thing is, I was amazed when I was in college and I was out in the Middle West for the summer and the kids had to go back in the middle of August. And this was the first time I'd ever heard of this. But my understanding was that in agricultural states, this pattern set in so the kids could take off to help their parents with the harvest.
Right. And Judy, I want to get Megan's thoughts on that. And we do hear that from a lot of older people, Megan. Look, we always start after Labor Day, and it wasn't a problem. Why is it a problem now?
Well, I started after Labor Day, too, growing up. And I'm not that old, but I started after Labor Day growing up, and we always seem to get out earlier. I think one of the things now, and the reason we are getting out later, is because the number of snow days that are called. And that's not something I would ever want to be the person who has to make that decision on. But I do think there are more snow days being called or more delays, which cuts into the contact instructional time toward the hours. And I think that's a piece of it that we have to look at as well.
Okay. And a lot more of your questions and comments after a short break. The number for you to join us, 1-800-892-6477. And in a couple minutes, we'll also talk to Governor Sununu about this, the idea that he put forward that the state should mandate a post-Labor Day start for public schools. All that coming up. Stay with us. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. In this part of our show, we're looking at when school should start. Governor Sununu sparked a bit of debate at the beginning of this school year, saying the state should mandate a post-Labor Day start. And that set off a lot of discussion. We've been hearing from our listeners. You can join us at 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.com. SNUNU.org. We have several guests in studio, and on the phone with us now is Governor Sununu. And Governor Sununu, thank you for taking time out. We really appreciate it.
Well, good morning, Laura. Thank you so much for having me on.
Well, and we've got lots of response from our listeners on this Labor Day question, pro and con, and I want to ask you about that. But Governor Sununu, just first, please, some breaking news. SB 3, the state's new law that changes some of the requirements for newly registered voters. As you know, a Superior Court judge just this morning refused to issue a temporary injunction that would have prevented the law from taking effect. You've been a big supporter of SB 3. What's your response, Governor Sununu?
Well, the judge took a cautious approach, but we're pleased that the major provisions of the law are being allowed to go into effect. This is just one step of kind of this legal process that some folks have started. We'll ultimately just, you know, we will abide by the law, whatever the courts decide. But, you know, we're very pleased that, those major provisions of the law, they're allowed to go into effect. And we'll kind of take it step by step.
Though the judge did, as you said, let the law stand for now, he did also say the state's argument on the penalties was, quote, unconvincing to say the least, and he prevented the state from enforcing any of the new penalties for SB 3. He called them a very serious deterrent to the right to vote. That's the criticism that opponents have had of this law for a long time. What do you think, Governor Sununu? Do the penalties have the potential to scare voters away?
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. I disagree with that opinion. But like we said, this is, you know, they've taken it to the courts. They want to fight it. But it's, again, just the first step. There'll be other legal steps throughout this process. There'll likely be the trial and an appeal and, you know, who knows where it goes from there. Again, the state will abide by whatever the courts ultimately decide as this goes forward. But we're very pleased with the results that we got today.
All right. We'll set this topic aside for now because we called you, Governor, to talk to us about this school start day issue. I do want to let listeners know we'll be addressing the voting issues Thursday in the exchange. So on to the Labor Day idea, Governor Sununu. Was this an aha moment for you, you know, all of a sudden? Or is this something that's been bugging you for a long time?
It's a little bit of both. So a few years ago, it was an aha moment I had. It was one of my in the shower ideas. We all get our best ideas while in the shower, I suppose. And look, it really spawns for me as a parent, right? From someone who was running a business that was driven in tourism, that was trying to take, you know, vacations. The fact that, you know, preschool activities were starting in early August for a lot of us parents, for our kids. It infringed on what was going on with quality time from a vacation standpoint. My kids were going back, I think a couple of years ago, they went back for literally a day and then had a four-day weekend. And I said, this just doesn't make sense. We're just trying to bring some common sense. And when we looked into the process of the school schedule, it's really based on a very old agrarian calendar. So I said, look, we just need to start having the discussion again, modernizing the calendar. We talk about innovation in schools. We talk about 21st century. Well, I think it's time that we start looking at the calendar, how we approach the school day. Maybe we, you know, this has spawned a whole different world of discussions in terms of the length of day and how we approach vacation. There's a whole discussion out there that's now, they're now talking about homework. You know, do we provide too much homework, after school homework in schools? So the good news is I think it's really spawned a discussion that has to happen, that should happen. Where the legislature takes it, I'm not quite sure. I suspect someone will put forth a bill that at least gets those hearings going. But I think it's just a common sense idea that is overwhelmingly supported, by the way. I can't walk out of the state house without someone grabbing me on the street saying how much they like the idea. But it's a discussion that probably should have happened a long time ago, and we're just happy to bring it to the forefront.
Well, it has sparked a lot of discussion. You're right. And if you were in the studio with me, Governor Sununu, you'd see a stack of emails here. Let me share one with you. This is from Marjorie, who says, the enthusiasm for requiring that no school start before Labor Day has nothing to do with our children's education. It has to do with attendance at summer destinations. Governor Sununu says this will strengthen the economy. But will it?
Of course it will.
Marjorie says New Hampshire's employers of all political persuasions are asking for qualified workers, and qualified workers are educated workers. And she's worried about what's called the summer slide, you know, lower income kids who don't have the resources to go to cool camps or go on educational trips. So I wonder what you think about that, Governor Sununu, that not all families are created equal here.
Well, look, if the argument is we shouldn't do this because it only affects tourism-based businesses, that's wrong. It's about the quality of families. It's about quality time. It's about a common sense calendar. Does it help the tourism business? Of course it does. Find someone down on Hampton Beach that wouldn't love this idea. It would put tens of millions of dollars into our economy. It would allow kids to keep their summer jobs longer. right? It would allow farmers. I mean, we're not on an agrarian calendar, but let's face it, we have I've talked to farmers that those high school kids go that they rely on. They're back at school. They're basically done their jobs by August 20th. That extra week or two can really make a difference. And so when whether you look at adding, you know, a length to the day or shorten the day, the point is that our stipulations that are in our laws right now, they're old. They're old-fashioned, right? If we're going to have a 21st century education system, let's start acting like it, and let's take this up as part of that discussion that cannot just bring benefit to families but to our economy. And frankly, you know, this isn't a discussion that needs to happen outside of the schools. I want to make sure the public school teachers have an input here and the administrators have an input here. I've had a lot of teachers come up and think this is a great idea because, again, they've told me, well, the first 3 days are just these kind of warm-up days, nothing really happens. You know, well, we don't want to go to school all the way into July. Well, of course not. So that's where you got to look at the system as a whole. And I think this has just sparked up a very intense discussion, I think in a very positive way. And I would say that those who disagree with this idea are in the vast, vast, vast minority. This is an idea that's overwhelmingly supported by the general public. I'm talking 95 to 99%. And so it's just something that we just have to have the discussion on.
According to media reports, a few states have passed this Labor Day start mandate, but in the ensuing years, many districts in those states have asked for opt-outs to the point where, according to the union leader, 123 districts in Michigan asked to have waivers to start earlier. Again, according to the union leader, similar problem in Virginia. Lots of districts passed waivers. If we were to do this, Governor Sununu, should New Hampshire not allow waivers, given that a lot of schools will try and opt out?
I don't know. I don't necessarily think they shouldn't, but that should all come out as part of the hearing, right? I mean, that's why we bring this to the forefront. That's why it should be a public discussion to make sure that we're hearing all sides.
Well, and you mentioned teachers earlier. We did get an email from Michael who says, I've been an educator for over 20 years. I can say anecdotally that many of my students have commented that they prefer to start after Labor Day for many valid reasons, Michael says. My observation has also been that students aren't as connected and focused before Labor Day than they are after. And Michael says, in terms of business and industry, the governor has a good point. So, Michael, thank you for that email.
Well, I would agree. Yeah. Again, I agree just as a parent, right? I mean, I think every parent out there sees, you know, the kind of the attitude of the kids. It's like a struggle. They know what's going on in those first 3 days, and it's good to get a little bit of a warm-up. I understand those valid arguments. But, look, when I was younger, virtually no school ever started before Labor Day. None. Right. And then we started getting this slide as district after district started eating into the summer for various reasons. I think we just have to kind of just re-examine it, re-look at it. Doesn't mean that, you know, you're going to have a one size calendar that fits everybody. Maybe we'll provide a system that does provide some flexibility in there for certain reasons, whether they're people that can ask for waivers or whatever it is. I think the point is that no one's ever brought this topic to the forefront to say, let's start talking about it. And that's simply all we've done. We're not saying this has to be the way it is and put it down in concrete, but I think it's a very healthy discussion to have. It affects so many parts of our culture and our lives here in New Hampshire, especially for a state that is very tourism driven and a state that does have a workforce shortage that would love to have their workers be able to stay a little longer. And I'm sure a lot of those high school students would love the ability to make a little more money for a couple more weeks. So it's all part of that discussion, and I think it just brings a healthy topic to the forefront.
Well, last question for you, Governor Sununu, and then I know you have to go. Wendy sent us an email saying something that a lot of folks said before you were able to come on with us, which is, you know, let each district control its own schedule. What about the local control argument that you know, each district knows what works best for its own community?
Well, of course, you always want to respect local control in so many aspects, especially in education. So that is one of the concerns here. As we've done it, it has drastically affected, to the negative, the whole of the state. I mean, look, technically every state law that you pass is an infringement on local control if you want to get, you know, detailed about it. So you want to minimize that encroachment, of course. But when you look at the net impact to the state, the net impact to our culture, and just the fact that so many people are in favor of this, again, it's just we're not mandating something on day one. We're really saying, let's have the discussion. Let's bring it to the forefront. Let's talk about the length of days in schools. Let's talk about, how we approach vacation. What is the philosophy?
Okay.
Right? What's the philosophy? If so, you know, we have 180 days on the books. Why? Can anyone explain to me what the number 180 means and why we have it? It's arbitrary. It's completely arbitrary. So we have to start focusing, when we talk about education, quality, not quantity. That's the big takeaway. Let's focus on the quality of education, not just the number of hours and the number of days. Let's make sure these kids are getting what they need and really maximizing that time in the classroom.
Well, Governor Sununu, we really appreciate you being generous with your time. Thank you very much.
You bet. Thank you, guys.
All right. That's New Hampshire Governor Chris Sununu, again, talking about an idea that he put forward a couple weeks ago that has generated a lot of conversation, whether the state should mandate back to school post Labor Day. All of you, let's go to our listeners. And Andy is in Alton. Hi, Andy. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, Laura. Thanks for letting me talk
sure.
to you. In Alton, we recently, well, we're big on experimenting, although we won't admit it.
Go ahead, Andy. Okay, I think we dropped off, and I would love to hear about Alton experimenting, even though they don't admit it. So, Andy, I'm sorry about your phone line there. Here's another email. This is from Kevin, who says, I'm wondering why we even have it now, meaning summer break. Why not just take an extra 2-week break every season and then not even worry about the summer slide? Wow, Dean, I'm going to turn to you. You're the one who's had to wrestle with the calendar.
Well, there are a lot of alternative calendars we could look at. Year-round schooling is one of them and so forth. You know, the one that typically pops up, why do you have a break in February and a break in April? Why not go to the private school model of the 1 week? There are a number of
things.
In
March, yeah. I get that question from friends from out of state a lot. Really? February and April?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, propose that and see what the ski areas say about that.
Speaking of tourism, right.
Speaking of tourism. But one of the things that I find as far as change goes is people that adapt to whatever calendar you do. So if this law is passed, we will adapt to whatever calendar you do. But they've got vacation plans, they have timeshares, they have a number of other things that go on like that. So, you know, if this law passes, it'll be another one that comes down from the State House and it says, you know, this is the way you should do things, and we'll adapt to it and move on.
Let's take another call. This is Evan in Concord. Hi, Evan. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi, thank you. I appreciate it.
Sure.
I think that there should be some discussion about maybe having a fixed start date, like maybe September 1st or something. And when it comes to the business side of things, I think that that's purely what this is. It's not necessarily about a child's education. I think the most important thing in a child's life is structure. And I think that, you know, having a fixed date would also help parents and businesses plan for the upcoming school year. And if we have a set date, and we leave the end date flexible, then I kind of would, you know, I feel like that would kind of touch all the bases that you're trying to get here, you know?
So in favor of the fixed post-Labor Day start date, sounds like that's what I'm hearing from you, Evan?
Well, yeah, I mean, if it ends up being after Labor Day, or it could be beforehand, and that's something that should be discussed in the hearing that Governor Sununu was just talking about.
Okay. Thank you for the call, Evan. Go ahead, Dean.
I do want to mention one local control issue. It's Co-Brown. Co-Brown, it starts before anyone else in the state. And I have a little knowledge of why they do that. But they try to build their calendar so their first semester ends before the Christmas break. So they probably start before anyone. They're a high school-only district. And for them, that's a very important thing. We end end our first semester right before Christmas. We come back from the long Christmas break. We start our second semester. We get out early. A very sound educational reason, and they've worked that through their local community, and that makes sense. I've also worked in communities that want Labor Day off for another reason. If you're close to Hopkinton or Lancaster, that's fair season, and you better not infringe on fair season because you may not have kids in school. And when I was in the North Country the other day, we kind of joked about that we should call a holiday is, of course, the opening day of deer season because we had very few people. So, you know, depending on the locality, I think this really is a local control issue because there are a number of issues going on with it.
Go ahead, Megan.
I completely agree, Dan. I think, you know, to keep saying this, it needs to be a local issue. We keep hearing about the seacoast and how this would help all the revenue on the seacoast for the Labor Day tourism. But other parts of the states have different times of the year that would help them more. Do we take most of the winter off in the North Country for skiing? Or do we look at something with fall foliage and we take more time off so people are coming into the state and we can show them where the leaves are? I mean, it has to come back to what is the best for the education of the kids in New Hampshire. And yes, this is going to help business. I don't think anyone would disagree with that. But what is best for the education? Those 3 days in the beginning of the school year, if you do have 3 days in your classroom, I can tell you as a teacher, there's a lot that goes on. You're building rapport with the kids. You're setting up the climate for the rest of the year. And you are doing things with them. It's not 3 days of just sitting there and looking at each other. There's a lot of work that actually goes into those 3 days.
Our caller whose phone dropped out is back with us, Andy in Alton. Go ahead, Andy.
Hi. Yeah, you can also count school days as hours over the year. And that, we tried that in Alton. We're adjusting this each school day by just a couple of minutes to either side. And it effectively gave us we covered the requirements in 177 days, which allows us to add flexibility through the year, you know, taking snow days and starting after Labor Day and maybe even ending up a little earlier. And I haven't heard anyone really talk about that.
Right. So adding more minutes to the day. And, you know, this whole conversation that's come out since the governor put this idea forward makes me think that we have to wrap this up now, but we should look more at this idea of what is a school day, how many more minutes would help, and so forth. Go ahead, Megan.
Just one last comment. You know, any New Hampshire educators across the state, we want to have a discussion on this. We haven't been asked. This is the first time. We would like to have a discussion with the governor on this because it does open up so many more issues than just the start date of school. So we are more than willing and would love to have a discussion with the governor on this.
More minutes to the day, that's a question. Whether we need February and April breaks. What about those extra days tacked on to the long weekends? What about kids not being able to go to school on voting day? All these issues need to be part of the mix. I want to close out with an email that I got from some fifth graders in Mr. Pryor's class at Fuller School in Keene. Now, Keene started pretty early, in my opinion, Thursday, August 24th. So this was the question the students responded to. Should New Hampshire pass a law saying schools must start after Labor Day? Ivy says no, because we would have to get out later. Kanan says, yes, you should start after Labor Day so we can see our families. Hannah says, no, because that makes us go to school later in the summer, which would ruin people's summer plans. Mackenzie says, yes, because pools are still open in August and it's just too hot to learn stuff. Jordan says, I think the Keene district should decide, not the governor. So my opinion is for the Keene people to decide. Thank you so much to the students at Mr. Pryor's Fuller Elementary School class in Keene, New Hampshire. And thanks to our listeners and thanks to our guests. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.